Welcome to the Crimes and Dimes podcast, entertaining you with stories about famous financial fraud so that we can decipher where white-collar criminals went wrong. Let's go fishing!
So welcome back to Crimes and Dimes. I'm Josh Krafchick along with Rob Timburi, who survived another tax season. What tax season is this for you, Rob?
12 or 13. I have to double check my numbers.
All right, so he's in his bar mitzvah year of tax seasons, 12 or 13.
He's now a man.
When it comes
after
to tax
season, I've become a man. I got to tell you, this one was brutal. Another month of everything else. So,
well, we're glad that you were successful this tax season. And, of course, we have our real estate mogul, gold digger, Andrew Saltman.
The real Saltman.
The real Saltman. Please stand up. And Rob found a new Ponzi that was just here in Florida, Port St. Lucie, a man by the name of Daryl Bank. And he was actually convicted of conspiracy, mail, wire fraud, selling unregistered securities, and money laundering. He targeted more than 300 investors, mostly senior citizens. And basically what he was doing, he was taking their money and depositing into an account, then moving it somewhere else, and basically just using the money to pay off the investors over time. Essentially, he's been fined like lots of money and he's going to jail for many, many years after a jury convicted him these past couple weeks. In regards to senior fraud, and I mean, this is just basically like the same thing over and over, taking money, putting it somewhere. People think it's going into investment and basically using investors' money to pay everyone off.
But he wrote a book, Successonomics.
Yeah, he wrote a book. He was on the radio. And he's facing more than 300 years in prison. And if you take a look at his mugshot, his name's Daryl Bank, D-A-R-Y-L, Bank, B-A-N-K. If you look at his mugshot, he's definitely guilty.
I didn't look at it. But what I find interesting about this latest Ponzi scam is that the victims didn't know that 20 to 70% of their investments were being transferred in the form of fees. So somehow or another, 20 to 70% of fees, they still invested.
Yeah. they definitely weren't disclosed what they were being charged. Andrew, could you imagine making 70% rips on every mortgage deal that you do?
That's awesome. that's such a huge. So wait, he was charging 20 to 70%? Is that
the fees? Yep.
In fees? So like on $100,000, he was charging minimum $20,000. Maximum $70,000. Wow.
So, which is interesting because I guess the clients would have had to sign off on the fees. No, Josh? I mean, he says.
It's kind of like when you buy your first house. There's so much paperwork. You're just like, get me out of here. Let me sign up. And I want to go on my merry little way.
But in real estate and mortgages, they have limits. You can only, you know, you can't make a certain percentage greater than a certain percentage, you know? Well, so
I stand corrected. It says these victims did not know the 20 to 70%. So apparently it wasn't disclosed. Maybe it was somewhere buried, but yeah, they did not know.
An advisor charge 20% service fee, Josh?
I think they can.
Hedge funds can charge like a fee. And then if they hit certain targets, they can charge like a performance fee of like 20%. So they can be like, for the first 10%, we're going to charge a certain fee. And if we do better than 10%, we're going to take 20% of those returns. So it's like a performance-based fee. However, no one's charging a 20% rip on the front end. That's just straight ludicrous.
And that's kind of like
telling yourself, I'm going to go buy a new car and I'm going to lose 20% of the value as soon as I drive it off the lot. And that's a good investment.
So can that be legally done? Can an advisor charge 20% upfront? I know the industry average is like 1% to 2%, right? So
I know some RIAs in Atlanta that are charging flat fees now. So whether you have 200 grand or a million, if you want in with the firm, you pay the minimum. So I think as long as it's disclosed, I think it's okay.
Wow. Okay. So there's no maximum.
There's definitely maximums.
There's a maximum. There is a maximum.
Because obviously this guy got caught and he's facing up to 300 years in prison. So essentially I guess what he was doing is he had like one account for the fees and then the other account is where the rest of the investor's money was going. So basically he was just churning and churning and get people to sign up and just collecting the fees. I mean, he didn't do it alone either. He was aided by an attorney and then a couple other people all in Florida. And he was actually barred from the securities industry back in 2010.
The interesting thing is he sold illiquid and highly speculative investments. So it was a Ponzi scheme, but at least he was investing something.
Yeah, that's true. However, I don't know if you'd ever recoup your investment with those sort of fees.
Well, it's interesting enough that the radio station was confident enough to give him a position on talk radio. I don't know what kind of station this was, but
they clearly didn't do a FINRA background check. Yeah, this is shows the importance of like vetting people, right? Yep. This guy in 2010 was misappropriating funds and providing false information and testimony, leading him to sell unregistered securities, blah, 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 all happened in 2010. So what happened in 2010, Josh?
Yeah, I mean, back in 2010, he was registered as a broker and then he was barred.
Yeah.
Now he's completely disbarred from the industry. But I mean, he had a couple of complaints against him leading up to this.
Right.
So, I mean, this is, I guess, the reason some people see safety in investing in large companies, like the big players in the world, because they're like, oh, like they see stories like this. However, there are things going on with the large companies as well that they're paying lots of fines on each and every year. It's just not as publicized because they do a good job of sweeping things under the rug.
Right. Well, it's funny you mentioned that. Does Wall Street Journal still list on their website the fines and penalties that the wirehouses get? Because when the hard copy was delivered to my house every day, every 6 weeks or so, they would list all the fines that the big boys paid.
Yeah. I mean, if you just, I'll Google right now, top fines for 2020 for wirehouses and see what comes up.
I want to order a copy of that book, Successonomics. I wonder what they would teach us.
I don't know.
Yeah, good question.
But three major banks make up half of 2020's $11.3 billion in fines.
Yeah.
So I'm seeing which three banks here are doing that. And that's just crazy. Goldman Sachs was number one, paying almost $4 billion in fines.
What? $4 billion in fines?
Yep. They had that thing go down in, what was it, Indonesia?
Yeah.
Then Wells Fargo was number two at just under $3 billion.
So basically, they're buying their way out, right? Do you think if this guy had any money left over, he could have bought his way out too?
If he had enough money, he probably could have got off.
Yeah, that's crazy. So yeah, if you're going to be a fraud, save some money.
Yeah, and then JP Morgan Chase is third, just under $1 billion in fines.
What we should have done is find out if we could have found one of these investors who invested with Daryl and find out, you know, what exactly the story was, because this really would be good for our audience to, when they're hearing certain things, to put a red flag up.
Yeah. I mean, he was on the radio, he wrote a book. So, I mean, on the surface, it looks credible. However, when you start to dig a little bit and you do some due diligence on someone, which is public information, he's had a track record. And then eventually, as Rob likes to say, fear and greed.
Well, the thing is, why do people not do their due diligence? Are people lazy? Do they just rely on the public image of these people? I don't understand.
Yeah, I think public image has a lot to do with it. It goes down to marketing.
Blind faith a little bit. I like the name of his show. Maybe we could change our show name to this, Getting Your Financial House in Order. I kind of like that. Do you think we could snag that?
Well, he's not using it anymore. Yeah. So if he's not using it, perhaps we could scoop it up.
Very interesting.
Interesting.
Getting Your Financial House in Order.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Yeah, I mean, what was the damage? $25 million in lost money?
Oh.
Probably pretty easy to do, yeah. And I like how he had the co-conspirators in other states, Virginia. It was like a national network, like a national fraud, pull people together.
Yeah, I mean, essentially what he was having doing is people were cashing out their 401k and all of their retirements to invest in this thing.
Fear and greed.
So,
fear and greed.
I mean, that would be taxable too, wouldn't it, Rob, if they're not moving it into some sort of tax advantaged account? So these people may have had to pay a lot of taxes to do these deals.
Well, they could have been structured that way, but, you know, Ponzi losses. I don't know how Ponzi losses are dealt with in retirement accounts, but there's actually a statute in the code as a miscellaneous expense on Ponzi losses. They added that after our favorite character, the pest, who committed his crime back in 08.
Yeah.
Old Bernie.
Rest in peace. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy how people fall for these things. I mean, how many people out there are doing this who just haven't been caught yet? How many do you think are out there?
I have no concept, but I will say they find faith in this, and they find faith in a friend of theirs that invested, and it gives them the false confidence to get involved. And I'm sure when someone's recommending something from a friend, they're probably doing zero due diligence. They're just going along with it.
So as business owners, how do we give people the peace of mind that we're not in this category, other than just telling them?
Keeping your assets with well-known, you know, back office custodians. You know, Fidelity is, you know, as an example, isn't going to let you walk off with their money, I don't think. Encouraging them somehow to do background checks. I mean, you can even do background checks to CPAs to see if we have violations against us. And stay away from what I would call sexy investments or conservation easements or, you know, high yield returns. You know, I mean, think about it. I mean, high yield right now would be very sexy for people in the zero interest rate environment. And they'll probably downplay the level of risk and suck people in. And before you know it, boom.
Yeah. What about in the mortgage industry, Andrew? How do you figure out who's good and who's bad?
Well, it's pretty regulated now, you know, over the years. So, you know, you can only charge a certain, there's just a certain amount you can charge. You can't charge in excess. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, the most you can do is like maybe forgery, you know, like manufacturing documentation, stuff like that. Well, but
Andrew, let me ask you a question. What if you took, and again, I'm being a schemer here, what if you took multiple loans, home equity loans, or refi your primary
bought
a secondary home? Right, in Florida, they can't take your primary house, so you could theoretically use that to buy other properties. I don't know. I mean, I still think there's ways to commit fraud if you really want to do it.
Yeah, it's hard to definitely sneak it through because they comb bank statements to see, and underwriters just will line item, you know, these types of things. You know, they used to see if they could buy like a bunch of primary homes at one time. You know what I mean? Or when you're really only supposed to purchase one. Right. I can see where somebody could make that effort. It would just be like a lot of work. It'd be a lot of work to do that. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, this guy actually like took money from a blind man.
Yeah. This guy is preying on the elderly.
Literally someone who is blind. So he robbed people blind and literally robbed the blind.
How did you find that on the internet?
Yeah, it said like he like even took 20 grand from a blind man.
Well, I'm sure that didn't bother him. I really want to order a copy.
Well, he doesn't want to discriminate.
I want to order a copy, you know, of Successonomics. I mean, what if Amazon has that?
I couldn't find it. There's other authors using that name.
Successonomics. Yeah, he's a co-author on the book.
Hey, you got some good publicity here. I just can't find his book. But yeah, 20 to 70%. It sounds like milking a little bit, how he just charged such high yields and got away with it. But there was no regulation in that industry.
The way he did that was the difference between the bin and the ass at the time, right? He moved the spread up.
Yeah, because they didn't care. If he was like, all right, we're going to get you a 5% return. And the investors were like, okay. And then the people taking the money were like, all right, you got to pay 18%. The guy was making 13, you know, getting such a high yield spread. And, you know, it's basically like it's a hard money business loan.
I mean, Josh, back in the day, there was no digitized pennies. It was all done in quarter and eighths. So you at least made an eighth on every deal. And sometimes you made 3/4 of a point. And then, you know, the bid asked in the newspaper is the spread.
Yeah. I mean, advisors, we were making 1% per trade. And then on the penny stocks in Wolf of Wall Street, they were making significantly more.
Another great movie.
As he said, he was selling garbage to garbage men.
The problem is a lot of garbage men have a lot of money, especially in New York.
Well, it's just propping up values. You know, it's like Bitcoin, man. It's like, you know, this thing is worth so much money, but why? Right. Like, you know, just people are propping up these values and stuff. I don't know how that really connects to this.
Well, the main appeal of those penny stocks is the line, but getting you in early. This is an early opportunity.
Yeah.
And that's very enticing, getting you in early. You feel like you're stuck.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Getting in.
You don't want to miss the next Bitcoin.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, this guy was investing their money in illiquid, which I find interesting. What is possibly illiquid? You know, what is a liquid? Like, not salable.
Illiquid today would be a REIT where you put your money in and it's locked up for 2 years. I mean, that's my definition of illiquid right now. Something like that.
And highly speculative, you know, like that would be Bitcoin, I'd probably say.
Yeah. I mean, some life insurance has large fees if you sell early too.
Yep.
You know, a house can be considered illiquid.
In a normal market, it is. Not in this market, but yeah, in a normal market. But yeah, permanent life insurance is very illiquid. I mean, it's only really worth it for people that can hold it a long period of time and have the money to fund it. Otherwise, it's not a good deal. Sorry for all you insurance people out there.
Well, moral of the story is, if it sounds too good to be true, it is.
Was there something too good to be true here, though? Like...
They didn't. They never said what returns he was promising.
I think the background check was the big miss here, right? Because this guy got, you know, how do you run it? You can Google what that FINRA background, right, Josh? You can check
that. Yeah, you just go to brokercheck.com. You can right. type everyone's name in.
Yeah, I think that's kind of like the moral here. Like,
well,
okay, in 2010 he was barred from security.
But this goes back to Ponzi, the original Ponzi.
I mean, like,
the fact that he had a book and a radio show gave him an air of credibility. And that's all the radio audience needed to know. And that's all they probably wanted to do.
Yeah. So they didn't do their due diligence. But in 10 years ago, he was barred. FINRA barred him. And it's confusing because his name is Bank, right? So that's confusing. So barred Bank from the securities. He got barred from the industry. He literally was not even allowed to do this.
And the radio station hired him. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, he's a salesman, right? So maybe he had, like, he could sell them. And he's like, this guy is not even allowed to trade as of in 2010.
I bet you Ray Ann Gibson or Roger Hudspeth were probably the face of getting the radio deal.
So what were they, the lawyers? So people propped themselves up with lawyers. Is that what it was? Are they the attorneys?
Yeah. Get some representation.
Give them credibility.
Put your name on a book, be on the radio, and you're an instant expert. Just like having a lot of followers on social media automatically makes you an influencer.
That's right.
Yeah, but this guy literally was not allowed to trade, and that's exactly what he was doing.
Yep.
And
well, he didn't need the trade. He was just taking 20.
He's pocketing it. Let's ballpark it at half.
Yeah.
So what he was just operating off book, basically.
This reminds me of the episode of South Park. Any of you watch South Park?
Not in recent times.
I'm not allowed to.
Well, I don't know who it is, but one of them goes into the bank and he deposits the money in the bank and he asks the guy, so where's my money? He's like, it's gone.
Oh, the Bitcoin one. I saw that though.
It's like, where's the money? It's gone. But like,
where's my Bitcoin?
No, it's gone.
No, it's gone. It went down. It's out. You have zero left.
It's gone.
It's gone. Yeah.
It's gone.
And it's gone. So investing guaranteed to lose 20 to 70%. So, I mean, I do you think the fees were even disclosed?
Does it matter though? This guy wasn't even allowed to trade, right? So like, yeah, he probably was he was lying the whole way. Right. Who cares? You know, he was. What's the website that you can check this stuff?
FINRA check.
I don't know. It's not on Broker Check. I look. There wasn't a whole lot of details.
So
there.
So that's where you want to
come up on Broker Check. Now it says barred with like a big like bar
for him.
Yeah.
So that's what is that by his name?
Yeah. Daryl Bay.
Yeah. So there you go. So if you're out there to all of our listeners, if you're out there, you're going to want to go on BrokerCheck. I'm on it right now. .finra.org. And then you're going to want to check. And then you can put his name here. It was Daryl Bank. And And there he is.
Some of the stories on Finner are hilarious.
Literally, there is a big red flag.
I got to check it out. Yeah.
It has, yeah, it's like, it's an X. Bar. Yeah. Bar. Okay. So, you know, and then you could probably dig into the more details, right? Like, geez.
Yeah, there's some details in there.
You got to do the homework. Okay. You can't rely because your friend's investing, or they have a radio show, or it sounds good, or you've heard good things. You got to pay attention. You got to do some level of homework on your own. Because to Josh's point, there's a million of these out there, and 999,000 of them haven't been caught yet.
So it says in 2009, he and other people misappropriated 161,000 in commissions and payments belonging to his member firm for their own use by directing his firm to wire the money from his firm's accounts into another account, who in turn transmitted the funds into an entity controlled by just a lot of
transfers,
a lot of track, right? So this guy got barred.
Josh, do we know how he got caught?
They didn't really go into details how he got caught that I saw anywhere. I'm sure it was like one person complained and then they looked and they're like, that looks weird. And then they probably got another one, but I didn't see anything on how he got caught really. There wasn't a whole lot of details on this one, which was a little strange.
Yeah, the first one or the second one when he got caught, you know what I mean? Like, I'm guessing his partners probably or somebody. I don't know.
Because I'm assuming if everyone's getting their money, I don't think anybody really would complain. I mean, you know, that's the interesting thing.
Yeah. Well, that's the name of the game. So
check, broker check.
Yeah, that's the idea. Is always ask. I always tell people, ask the question, do you have anything on your, like, you know, you got anything on your permanent record?
Yeah.
Have you ever had any complaints filed against you?
And if they do, you probably want to call maybe like what, your accountant, and be like, yo, what's this? And they'll be able to explain it.
When you look, I think if you're in the business long enough, someone's going to complain about something, and some of it does go without merit. I mean, to our audience, I mean, just because a client complains about something doesn't mean they're right. And a lot of times they'll be cleared. Someone's unhappy with something. So,
but a complaint versus being barred are
correct.
Two different.
If you're barred, you're barred. Right.
Yeah. You think would he have fought it? Who knows what happened in 2009? Maybe he didn't fight it. You know, he just said, forget it. F it. I'm just going to go out on my own and charge 50% fees. Basically, he has no purpose in the world, you know?
Well, that's all we got for today on Crimes and Dimes. And we will see everyone next time.
Thank you for listening to the Crimes and Dimes podcast. We look forward to having you tune in next time. And remember, don't get caught fishing.